It's your 40s. This is The Juggle, a special podcast from The Takeaway, and I'm Tanzina Vega.
I keep thinking this decade is the heroic decade.
We're talking money, work, health, dating, sex, all of it, because you told me that in your 40s, you don't always feel seen or heard.
We've often heard about the midlife crisis, and this is really the age that it hits.
I started to notice less energy, stamina.
The declines in libido, and the increase potentially in depression, the potentially lack of interest.
It feels like you have a lot of pressure right now to catch up.
I'm just about to turn 44, and I'm starting to feel like I'm aging out of my industry.
No one had said, wow, this could be great. Here's the things you should think about to deal with that.
Well, I hear you, and we're going to talk it all through together. If you're in your 40s and you're more tired than you've ever been because you're juggling life, work, money, aging parents, aging yourself, relationships, not wanting to play games anymore, etc., 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 raise your hand. How are you coping? Well, I tweeted that last week, and boy, did I get a response.
I'm 48 and my husband is 60, and our biggest financial challenge is making ends meet and still be able to save money for college and retirement.
Well, the first one was divorce. The second one was college tuition for three children. Vacations were few and far between, and if they were at all, they were fairly local.
I lost a job at the height of the financial crisis in 2010, back in my mid-40s. So I just had to immediately and quickly cut expenses.
It took me 17 years to get my undergraduate degree after raising kids and working full-time jobs.
My biggest financial challenge in my 40s has been tackling the overwhelming credit card debt I built up in my 30s.
So many of you rose your virtual hands to tell us that your 40s are full of pitfalls and stressors. But also, there's some really great stuff about your 40s and some really great ways of coping.
I stopped being nice and stopped apologizing when I don't need to. I set boundaries.
Increasing my percentage put into my 401k annually. I also deposited a certain amount of money into a savings account every 2 weeks.
Simply a frugal lifestyle.
I just want to say education opens doors to wages that lift families out of poverty.
Calling this podcast special The Juggle. And let me tell you, the juggle is real. One of our Twitter followers said that line, and I love it. So we're hashtagging it, The Juggle is Real. And if you're not quite in your 40s yet, or if you've already been through them, we see you too. Come along for the ride with us. First off, we take on something many of you tweeted at me about, money. And in your 40s, financial pressures and challenges are different than before. Arielle O'Shea is an investing and retirement specialist for NerdWallet, and she joined me to talk it all through.
Everything sort of adds up in terms of the financial pressures. If you have children, you may be having childcare expenses. And then along with that, you may be wanting to save for their college at the same time. And then your own retirement, you're wanting to save for that. And if you didn't do a very good job of that when you were younger, and many of us didn't, then it feels like you have a lot of pressure right now to catch up. And then there are other goals, you know, home buying, things like that. And then, you know, one thing that we don't think about as much is aging parents. And if you're supporting them or helping them in any way, you're sort of stuck between all these different drains on your finances, and it can be exhausting.
Let's talk a little bit about how much people make. So our income, which is different than how much wealth people have, which we won't depress anybody with right now. In your 40s, where are we in terms of earning potential?
The interesting thing about this is that it is different for men and women. So according to PayScale, men actually peak in their early 50s and women peak much earlier, about 10 years earlier, in their early 40s.
Wait, in other words, this is it?
This is it. Yep. If you're a woman, you may have already had your income peak, which is pretty sad.
Do we know anything about why that is, Arielle, or is it just good old, you know, institutional issues?
I think it's institutional issues. I mean, I think a lot of the issues, you know, the differences between men and women have to do with the career breaks that women tend to take earlier on in their careers that men don't take. So they may be missing out on bonuses and pay raises and promotions and career growth. It's all these issues that we talk about all the time with wage inequality. Same thing is happening here with wage peaking.
What are some of the primary drains on financial resources during one's 40s? I'm thinking homeownership, student loans, God forbid.
Yeah, home ownership, student loans. I mean, about 20% of this generation are still paying down one or more student loans. Some of them with older children may be either, you know, paying for college, paying off student loans for their children. They're saving for college. We talked about childcare expenses if you have younger children. Those, you know, a third of families now spend 20% or more of their household income on childcare, which just like blew my mind. So all of those things. And then again, you know, if you're helping parents, you're trying to save for your own retirement. It's really this, you know, they call it the sandwich generation, and it really feels like a sandwich.
You know, one of the things also in the narrative around money is we hear a lot about millennials who say that they find it difficult to save. They're not getting paid enough. They can't do things like buy homes. But I think we also need to look at Gen X, and I mean specifically people in their 40s, but even beyond Gen X, and look at how this generation is also saddled with debt, right? I think some of your data showed that Generation X has about as much credit card debt as millennials do.
Yeah, it's similar to millennials. So about two-thirds have credit card debt. That's roughly the same as millennials. It's higher than baby boomers. And, you know, what was interesting is that they owe the highest credit card balances, and more of Generation X has made a late payment on their credit cards than any other generation. So I think that is a result of financial struggles and, you know, not having the money to come up to pay off the debt. But it's also the result of like so many different things on your time that you're forgetting because you have to take the kids to school and to take the kids to daycare and you have this work, and all these different things really add up in this decade.
And one of the things that strikes me is that we have less time to fix those things.
Yeah, I mean, it's about, you know, the halfway point of your career, and you really have to think about getting some of these things on track for sure.
Let's take a listen to one of our callers who shared her experience about life in her 40s with money.
Hi, this is Linda from Vancouver, Washington. In my 40s, I was laid off from a high-tech job just 6 months after I bought my house. So my struggle that decade was just trying to find work and earn enough income without dipping into my 401k, which I was not successful at. But I did make it to 16 years later when I finally ended up selling that house and buying another one. So I made it, but it was not easy being a single woman.
Well, first of all, Ariel, kudos to Linda, because that's a lot to do. But also, I want to talk about two things Linda brings up. Number one, layoffs. People in their 40s are starting to deal with, I think, ageism at this point. How big of a deal is job security at this stage?
I think it's a big deal. I mean, I think it's one of these things where you don't feel like you should, you know, it feels like ageism is something for much older people when you're in your 40s. You don't feel like it should affect you. But in reality, it can. I mean, you know, the Age Discrimination and Employment Act protects workers 40 and over for a reason. That's because, you know, that's when age discrimination can start to happen. And so it's something certainly that you want to be aware of.
Well, let's talk about some positive things, Ariel, that 40-somethings can do, whether they're married, single, kids, no kids. What are some things that, given the realities of this decade, and the current realities of where we are today, that this generation can start to do to feel more financially secure?
I think the most important thing that you can do is realize that it is not too late. You're right in the middle of your life. As Linda said, she made it, right? So you're going to get through this rocky time if you're feeling like it's a rocky time. And it's not too late to turn things around. So if you haven't saved enough for retirement, you still have 20, 25, 30 years to build that retirement savings before, you know, the age when most people tend to want a retirement. And so it's really about making the decisions now that can make up for some of the decisions that maybe you didn't make quite as well earlier. And so it's saving as much as you can. I mean, we talked about pensions and how people in their 40s and earlier generations don't have them. But what we do have is these Roth IRA accounts, which are great ways to save money and earn your earnings grow tax-free, which is something that our parents didn't have. So take advantage of the perks that we have.
Ariel O'Shea is investing and retirement specialist for NerdWallet. Thank you for being with us, Ariel.
Thank you.
From money, we turn now to work. And many of you have shared your stories of being a 40-something worker, from fear of ageism to time management.
Hi, this is Jessica from Los Angeles. I'm just about to turn 44. I work in a creative field, and I'm starting to feel like I'm aging out of my industry.
I'm worried about whether I can remain relevant enough to continue to earn what I need.
This is Rahajan Sastuwardoyo from Center East Long Island. One of the things I dislike about being an older single person is the assumption in a workplace that your time is less valuable than that of someone who is married and has children.
Thanks for talking to me about this. Bridget Schulte is the director of the Better Life Lab at New America, and she's also the author of Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And aside from her research on work, she's in her 50s and has some wisdom to share.
The 50s are good.
Good. This is good to hear. So let's talk about the 40s here. What defines this decade when it comes to work? How is this decade different than others?
Yeah, no, this is a really good question. You know, we've often heard about the midlife crisis, and this is really the age that it hits. And, you know, it hits in a lot of different ways, and they're actually finding through research that apparently there might be some kind of biological foundation to it. So what happens at work is that you're no longer the up-and-coming ingenue. You're no longer the kiddo who's, you know, got these bright horizons and you could go in all sorts of different directions. You've sort of, you know, charted out a path. You've had some successes. You've certainly had some failures that you've learned from. And then you kind of get into this period in your 40s where you're worried, like, am I stuck? Is this all I am? Is this all people see me for? Is this all I can do? You feel like I've got so much more left to learn, so much more left to do. You know, you don't necessarily feel 40. You still feel like you're that 23-year-old, and yet the world doesn't look at you that way. And you don't have that kind of time, and you've got far more responsibilities at home, whether you've got kids or not, that leads to an awful lot of time pressure and juggle.
What are some of the biggest and most damaging misconceptions, about work and workers in their 40s?
Well, you know, there is this certainly now with all this kind of like technology and kind of tech bros, this notion that you have, you're most innovative and you get your best ideas when you're young. You know, Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook even used to say, you know, young people are smarter. And I think that that's really dangerous, that that's actually not true. And that what you're missing out on with that kind of youth worshiping culture, which we've kind of always had, but at work, what then you miss out on is all of the experiences that people bring in their 40s and the wisdom that comes from having had sort of a zigzagging path or, you know, having, you know, coming straight up against your limitations and figuring out how to overcome them or navigate them, learn from failure, to pick yourself up and to go on. Those are enormous skills, life skills, wisdom skills that are really crucial in the workplace. And I do think that they tend to be overlooked when we keep thinking for the next, what's the next best, bright, shiny young thing.
Well, and also I want to bring up the idea here that there's another side, I think, to this, is that workers in their 40s who have been in the workplace, let's say, for a minimum of 20 years, if not more, some of whom, like myself, started working in their teen years. So we're talking about 30 plus years experience. That makes you more aware. It makes you more assertive, and you're probably getting paid more. Do any of those things factor into this sort of young, shiny object dichotomy that we're talking about?
Well, it certainly comes to play, you know, say in a financial crisis, and then people are looking at their org charts and figuring out who needs to go. And sometimes if you are, if you have that experience and you have that higher pay, people in power might say, oh, I can have 5 20-somethings do the same thing that you do. So there is that kind of precarity or danger, if you will, that comes up that can lead to some more sense of uncertainty in your 40s, particularly in some kind of a financial downturn or in some kind of reorganization. But I do think that just the very point that you made, what you bring, the experience, the knowledge, the institutional memory, all of that cannot be discounted.
You know, we often talk about struggles in the workplace and this idea of ageism. We've covered this on The Takeaway before. A lot of people don't know that ageism, technically, the protections begin at age 40. But Bridget, I'm wondering if you can tell us why these protections are so hard to enforce.
Well, it's sort of like anything when you've got a culture That it really, the workplace culture can be so very powerful, regardless of what the policies are or even what the laws are. Why you've had sexual harassment for so long and so much silence, even though there are laws and protections against that. It's like anything. If you live in a culture, it's defined by its leadership. There's all sorts of buzz right now about millennial workers, and they're now the largest segment of the work population. And so in many ways, people in their 40s feel sort of invisible or overlooked. And this is where it's really important that you make sure that you make your case, you make clear to people your value and what you bring and what you do.
And I want to round out the segment here because your 40s are not all terrible. Like you said, the 50s are actually something to look forward to. Professionally speaking, Bridget, what opportunities are there? How can people who are working and in their 40s make this a more successful and happy experience?
Well, I think a couple things is to recognize that in your 40s, you're often juggling an awful lot at work and at home. You're pulled in a lot of different directions with childcare or elder care. I think the first thing that people can do is give themselves credit for what they do, for all of the things that's on their plate, and have some self-compassion. We tend to be so hard on ourselves. And this is an era of transition where we move from being focused on our individual ambition, our individual sense of achievement and success, and moving into a phase where we're thinking about what can I give back to the future, to the community. So it's a real era of transition. Take the time to recognize that that is what it is. Be patient with yourself and give yourself credit for as much as you do.
Wonderful advice. Bridget Schulte is founding director of the Good Life Initiative at the nonpartisan think tank New America and director of the Better Life Lab. Bridget, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So, yep, the juggle definitely is real, especially when it comes to the health changes and challenges associated with our 40s. And here's what you had to say about that.
I didn't have time or energy or the psychic bandwidth to deal with being perimenopausal. And while I wouldn't recommend wrecking the rest of your life as a coping strategy, it sure worked for me.
I encountered probably with fairly normal aches and pains and stiffness, had heard yoga was a great way to mitigate some of those aging issues.
My husband and I each noticed a marked decline in our night vision as we each turned 40. That was an unwelcome surprise.
Thanks to all of you who shared with us. We hear you. Let's take a little bit more of an in-depth look at those changes now. Derek Griffith joined me to help with that. He's a professor of medicine, health, and society at Vanderbilt University, and he's also the director of Vanderbilt Center for Research on Men's Health. He also edited and contributed to a new handbook called Men's Health Equity. And I also spoke with Dr. Alexandra Sachs, a reproductive psychiatrist and the host of the podcast Motherhood Sessions. But I started by asking Derek, what are the major physical changes that happen at this phase of life for men?
Well, I think the biggest thing is really thinking about the changes that occur as it relates to metabolism and testosterone levels. Testosterone levels naturally tend to decline as we age, and your metabolism tends to slow. And so all of those things are a recipe for weight not disappearing as much as we'd like. We also tend to be less active sometimes as we move into these roles and responsibilities.
What about the mental health challenges that men face in this decade, Derek?
So a lot of it speaks to what some of your callers mentioned already, which is kind of this crisis of, figuring out how you're going to juggle stress, money, career, and these life changes. And so a lot of it's shifting from a phase of your life where you're basically been focused on yourself for the majority of your time to now focusing on family, work, and those kinds of things that are really about the relationships you have and the legacy that you're leaving. And so those the ways that we kind of try to juggle those kind of stressors are really difficult for us and tend to move us to prioritizing health a lot less and prioritizing these kind of roles and responsibilities a lot more.
Alexandra, I want to turn to you because women also face unique physical challenges. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, sure. So many of them overlap with what Derek was discussing, changes in metabolism, sleep, needing more sleep, like one of your callers mentioned. And then, of course, the biggest issue and a factor that mediates a lot of these physical changes is the change in your estrogen levels that happens around perimenopause and menopause.
And it's something we definitely want to talk about, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about the psychological changes that women experience in their 40s. Are they different than what we heard Derek say for men?
Well, I think I would begin with what Derek said in terms of taking care of others. Of course, we see that men and women do this and at the neglect of their own self-care, right? But we still do see in our country an unequal distribution in caretaking, both for young children and for parents, aging parents. This burden disproportionately falls on women. And so because in our country, we don't have sorts of social support that we may see in other countries that provide subsidized childcare, that provide mandated maternal leave that is paid, and also leave to take care of older parents, it's much harder for women to find time to take care of themselves because they're so burdened by taking care of others.
I mentioned we were going to go back to menopause and perimenopause, Alexandra. So this is the big thing, right? We all hear about menopause, right? The change of life. But rarely, or at least more frequently now, we're talking about perimenopause, which is, from my understanding, could last 6 months to years.
Absolutely.
What is this? Why don't we know more about it? And how does it impact women?
Yeah, so it's so important that we're talking about this because perimenopause is probably the time that is more physically and emotionally uncomfortable for women than even after menopause. So menopause is your last menstrual period. The 12 months after your last menstrual period defines when you've reached menopause. But perimenopause is the decade that may precede that. It may be 2 to 8 years. And what we really know about how hormones impact the body and the brain is that it's the shifting in the levels that can be most disrupted, especially for the brain and mood. So once the estrogen levels stabilize in menopause as being lower, it can actually be less disruptive for the body than that fluctuation of irregular periods, which is what the perimenopausal period is like. In perimenopause, it's also when you're experiencing the vasomotor symptoms.
And what does that mean?
So those are the hot flashes and night sweats. That leads to the insomnia, the sleep deprivation, which is so at the root of so many of the body and mind stressors that women feel in their 40s. When you can't sleep, you just can't be your best. You just can't think straight, and you certainly are going to be more irritable. So those hot flashes and night sweats are really worse in the perimenopause.
And of course, we know that we're talking in very big swaths here, men and women. I want to dig a little deeper, Derek. Are there racial disparities in what we're seeing, particularly when it comes to the health of Black men versus white men, for example?
We tend to see a lot of, for Black men, for example, a lot of early stage heart disease, diabetes and so forth, for Black and Latino men, for example. Obesity rates tend to be the highest in those two groups, Black and Latino men, and among men. Obesity rates generally are higher in women, but they tend to be highest in middle-aged men. And we so are surprised by that often because people are expecting, you know, you to get your health to decline as you age, but we find that actually men in their middle age years are actually struggling the most with a lot of these health challenges and tend to have, that's kind of what also defines what we call premature mortality, which is dying before the age of 70.
So, Derek, let's turn to a moment for something I think would pique quite a couple of ears. Let's talk about sex. How does sex change in your 40s for a man?
Ooh. Quite a loaded question.
How does your sexual health change when you're a man? How about that?
Well, I think it speaks to some of the things we've been discussing earlier. So with some of the changes that we're talking about, you know, if we're talking about male relationships with one another or male-female partnerships and so forth, I mean, there are all these things that we were just talking about, from the male menopause to perimenopause and menopause in women, that men may not be as attentive to when it comes to their sex lives. And so for men to even just recognize that the declines in libido, the declines and the increase potentially in depression, their potentially lack of interest, there can be physiological changes that are responsible for that. There can be the stress-related changes going on in their lives that may be responsible for that. So they can cause other kinds of stressors in their relationships and tensions in their relationships.
Alexandra, we talked a little bit about some of the physical changes, but for women in their 40s who may be perimenopausal, maybe heading into menopause, what are the changes that they experience when it comes to sex?
Yeah, sure. So because of decreased estrogen and decreased blood flow to the genitals, there can be vaginal dryness and thinning of the tissue, and that can make sex painful, so leading to physical discomfort. But the other physical things that may decrease your desire to have sex include the hot flashes, the sleep deprivation, the weight gain, and the depression that you may be experiencing. Also, issues with partnership as well, and social stress, having to wake up in the middle of the night to take care of a child, and issues like that. One thing that I would say, though, that's kind of interesting is that while we do ask women more about their emotional lives, and women are seen to report depression at a higher rate, I think that we talk to women less about sexual dysfunction. And we really see a disparity of that in terms of looking into research and treatment and even diagnosis of female sexual dysfunction in perimenopause and above.
I want to shift to a minute to, again, some of our listeners or people who are on Twitter were tweeting at us, and some of the things that my question to them was, how are you coping, right? That was the real central question. And Derek, this is to both you and Alexandra. And some of the things that came up, some of them were probably tongue-in-cheek, were weed, wine, and therapy. So let's break those down.
Okay, those are very different.
Exactly.
But they were,
and meditation. I'm going to add that in. So Derek, you got that weed, wine, therapy, meditation. Alexandra, yeah. Weed, wine, therapy, meditation. Is this a good cocktail? No pun intended. Should people be considering their consumption of weed and wine and increasing the therapy or not? I mean, these all seem really interesting.
I mean, I think one of the things that we realize is that people do what works for them. So you've learned over time, it's not an accident what people are choosing to cope with stress. And that the point I want to get to is that there are important connections between the leading cause of death within this particular age group and the types of ways that people are coping with stress. But you kind of develop a tendency to do things that work for you. And over time, if eating that piece of cake or having that glass of wine or that bottle of wine works for you, that's probably what you're going to continue to go back to until it doesn't work anymore.
We had one listener say bourbon and chocolate, which I can't argue with most of the time. Let's talk about therapy here, because therapy was a surprise for me that it came up. And I feel like, Alexandra, women, I think, are generally, I guess, encouraged to go to therapy. We talk about our emotions. It's okay. Is there something that, are you noticing more women doing this? Is this more of an open conversation about depression and therapy and seeking that kind of help at this age?
Well, listen, I'm so glad that you did a show recently on parity for mental health care, because we really don't have great access to talk therapy. I also think that we in our health system are not focused on prevention enough. So we don't do enough education for people before this age about exercise, about nutrition, about stress management, and about for primary care physicians to have the time to ask people, how are you doing? How are you feeling emotionally, right? If people don't have access to a mental health care provider, then those questions should be coming from their primary care physician, or for women in their reproductive years and perimenopause, from their OBGYN, who may be the only clinician they're seeing all year. So we need to increase emotional literacy in our clinicians as well and change the system to give doctors more time to talk to people about their feelings.
Derek, I want to ask you, because men, I guess, and again, we're speaking in generalizations here, traditionally have not been as open to therapy, at least publicly. But anecdotally, I can tell you that I know a lot of men in their 40s who said, you know what? I'm going to try this out. I'm going to go to therapy. And it's been life-changing for them. Are you seeing more men open to doing that?
I am. I think just to tie some of these parts of the conversation together, I think we've overvalued in particularly the healthcare system, men's sexual functioning, and undervalued their mental health and their emotional experiences. So I think we've done exactly the opposite for women. But I think it's got to be something where they find utility in it. I think what's different fundamentally about the ways that men tend to approach their health and their bodies and particularly their mental health is they see it as much more instrumental. Is what does this mean for me? Can I do something differently when I leave here today? Can I do something differently as it relates to going to work, as it relates to my sexual functioning, as it relates to my ability to have energy to do things with my partner, with my kids, in my community? We don't really value men's mental health. We don't really, you know, often it's stigmatized in and of itself. If men go into the doctor's office and say that they, you know, are experiencing some kinds of depression and so forth, it's not uncommon for those things to be dismissed. There's this interesting pattern that we're seeing with how to deal with men and mental health that we're really needing and showing that, you know, even with the rise in younger kids and suicide and so forth, and young Black males in particular, that we're seeing this real need to pay more attention to men's mental health, and they are seeking more. It's just that I don't know that the system is always prepared for men to actually go into care.
So we're on the end of the segment now. We've definitely gone into a very, very robust conversation. I do want to end on a different note. I'm wondering, as someone who's in her 40s, there are some good things about this decade. It's not all doom and gloom. I'm going to ask both of you, is there any joy that we can derive in health, in our bodies, in our mental state, in our 40s? Alexandra.
Absolutely. So on my podcast, Motherhood Sessions, I've been talking to a lot of women who are coming out of the childbirth years, but struggling, but also finding themselves, and in a way, you know, having a rebirth of their own identity, which can be the flip side of the end of your fertility. So this opportunity to discover yourself. There's a woman I talked to who was going back to school, and we talked about how she decided actually not to pursue having a second child in her 40s, and really kind of the opportunity to spend more time working on herself and appreciating, you know, as I'm seeing some doors close, maybe in my biological clock, I'm realizing this is my life. This is my time to live for me. And I think that's a beautiful opportunity for people.
Derek, what about you?
Yeah, I think what Alexander points out is that both men and women define health as broader than just their physical and mental health symptoms. It really has to do with how their relationships change and how they relate to one another and how they relate to things that are fundamentally more important to them. So I think it's an important sort of phase of life where you're transitioning from being a young adult and child and so forth to really figuring out who you are and how you're going to operate going forward and make some really important changes that are, you know, for better or worse, are going to really drive the rest of your life.
Derek Griffith is a professor of medicine and health at Vanderbilt University and director of Vanderbilt's Center for Research on Men's Health, and he edited and contributed to a new handbook called Men's Health Equity. And Dr. Alexandra Sachs is a reproductive psychiatrist and host of the podcast Motherhood Sessions. Thanks so much to you both.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
To round out this episode all about our 40s, we're turning now to family and relationships.
Hi, my name is Jim Anderson. I'm calling from Far Rockaway. I've been married 5 times, and I'm currently widowed.
Hi, my name is Jen, and I'm from East Hampton, New York. I'm 43 years old and had my first baby at 40 and my second at 43. She's now 12 weeks. I wanted a career before I started a family. I'm engaged, but having children was our priority, so we will get married next. Life for me seems to be just beginning.
This is Michael from Dallas. Raising children and trying to save the future, it feels like we're just barely treading water. It puts a strain on our relationship. Thank goodness we have great communication and a focus on intelligent spending. But as costs increase, it becomes more and more difficult.
Thanks to you all for sharing. I sat down with writer Glynis McNichol to talk about her experience coming into her 40s and how it changed the relationships in her life. She's a writer and the author of No One Tells You This, a memoir. What was it that no one was telling her?
So everything, it felt like, when I got to my 40s, it felt like I had been prepared for everything to be terrible, but not in the ways it was actually difficult. And nobody had prepared me for it to be wonderful, which I spent the first year when I turned 40 being so resentful about, that no one had said, wow, this could be great. Here's the things you should think about to deal with that. So I felt deeply unprepared on every level.
Turning 40 wasn't, that was actually great for me. It was everything after that. The year after, I was like, wait, what happened? And I kind of felt the same way, that no one really tells you or really talks about this decade in particular other than the negative. One thing we often hear about when especially when I made the call out to people on Twitter, was 40s often means, and family often means kids. But that's not the case for everybody. Tell us about your experience.
So one of the things I really struggled with was I wasn't married and I didn't have children. And it just felt like I had completely fallen off the map of any narrative we have around, particularly women's lives. And the truth is, I I sort of joke, somebody asked me to describe myself as child free, and I was
right. I don't know about that word.
I know. I think we really have a dearth of language around this experience altogether. But I was writing back to them as I had my niece and nephews crawling over me, and I was organizing a baby shower for someone. And I thought, your relationships in your 40s become so intense and complicated and intricate. And I think in this generation, we are support systems for each other in ways that we haven't figured out how to talk about properly.
One of the things you've said when you're talking to one of our producers is that it's very difficult to operate when you're not seen by a culture. What does that mean?
I think without recognition, how do you know your place in the world? And how do other people value you when there's no ritual to celebrate your own life? I think invisibility on every level is the worst punishment. And how do you measure your own progress and your place in the world without it? And I find that I find that difficult, and I still struggle with that.
I think it's something that you brought up really, really interestingly, because a lot of it does have to do with where do you fit into these bigger themes of marriage if you're not married, mm-hmm. having children if you don't have children, and then being the dreaded 40-something, right? Mm-hmm. All of those things. I'm in the same position. Mm-hmm. All those things collide. And it does feel like we're not seen mm-hmm. by culture.
Even when you're exhausted by all the roles you're playing, of course, you're playing so many roles. And when you're not seen, there's no way to talk about how difficult it is. And there's no way to talk about how wonderful it is either.
Right.
Which is really, really difficult. We have celebrations for a reason. We have rituals for a reason. And when you have none, which is what happens after 40 without a wedding and without a baby, particularly for women, it's like, where am I going? What am I doing?
Let's talk about the things that even if we don't have kids ourselves, how many roles we play in our 40s in other people's lives. Talk about that.
Well, I think in my experience, most of my friends have children, and most of my friends had children in their late 30s. Their family lives at some distance, which I think is becoming the norm. And what happens and what has happened to me is you become the support system. You become the fill-in. You become sort of the emergency childcare call. You are the person that goes and meets them when they come home from the hospital or changes the diapers or whatever it happens to be. And I'm so grateful for that because I quite enjoy playing that role. What is difficult about it is when that role isn't seen. And I think women are struggling with this conversation of motherhood versus not motherhood. And mothers are overwhelmed for a variety of reasons that we could talk at length about. And there's this assumption of, oh, you have so much free time, or, oh, you get to do what you want. And I've encountered that in very intense situations where I was overwhelmed helping other people with their lives and dealing with this sort of dismissive nature of, oh, you don't do anything. And so when we don't recognize any other version of a woman's life, we're so just so easily dismissive of how you're spending your time or the quality of your time or your right to your own time, really.
Let's talk about other types of relationships, romantic partnerships, which are just so easy at this stage. So, I mean, I feel like, tell me if I'm wrong here. I think that what happens at this age is that people will often stop introducing you as often as they may have prior, or you're getting filtered out of dating algorithms because your age cutoff is over 39. I mean, are these things, or you're the old lady cat spinster? Like, you know, why are we still stuck in these tropes? And is that wrong? I mean, is there this robust dating world out there for women and men in their 40s?
I think both. If that's, okay. I know that's okay. A frustrating answer.
I'll take it.
I find that when I want to date, there's certainly a world out there of people who are eager to date. I think it looks a lot different. Oftentimes you are dating people who are coming out of marriages, who have children, and that's a much different dynamic. I find that I quite like to be alone, which I think is a justifiable way to want to exist. At this age, many of your friends are in the deep end of their own marriages, and maybe they're coming out of those marriages, and those marriages are dissolving. And I find that I am a emotional support system
to
many people, and also increasingly an example of why it's not so scary. And so that's been my experience. And I'm not surrounded by friends. None of my friends, and I think if you're in the position where your friends are making you feel bad about your life, it's time to reassess those friendships. But none of my friends have ever spoken to me as if my life is less interesting or worthwhile or somehow missing.
And also wondering whether or not you are hearing themes that emerge when I talk to friends that, because I have very close friends that are married, have kids, some that don't, but there seem to be similar themes throughout this decade. And I think caregiving in particular was one that seemed to span across everybody, particularly parents. Mm-hmm. You took care of your mother for a while. Tell me about that.
My mother was diagnosed with Parkinson's and then dementia. And her decline was very swift. And my sister has three small children at the time. And I ended up flying back and forth to Toronto, where my mother lived, to sort out care, to provide care, to navigate through the system of getting her the attention she needed, which is overwhelming for anyone who's done it. It's such a difficult, emotionally difficult place to be. And again, I think until we recognize the heavy lift that is, it's hard to provide support for the people in it. I was just overwhelmed for the year I turned 40, caretaking other people's lives and providing that support.
And off of that, another thing that came up on Twitter about this conversation was setting boundaries. A lot of it is about saying no. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that, particularly in your 40s.
I sometimes think by the time you're in your 40s, you've hopefully navigated like the physical nutrition and exercise that you need and what works for you. And in the same way, hopefully you're in a place where you know emotionally the exercise and nutrition and stuff you need. And that really entails understanding how many people you can have in your life, who you can have in your life, and how much you can do and provide other people, and then learning to say no and not feeling shame around it, I think, is the thing. And for women, that is just particularly hard. And as you noted earlier, when you aren't a parent, the expectation around your time can be overwhelming, and the language around your life when you don't participate quickly slides into selfish or spoiled.
And oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's unfair.
Let's end the segment. If you had to give a name to the decade and the relationships that define it, what do you call it?
I keep thinking this decade is the heroic decade, that you've spent those, if you go back to Joseph Campbell's hero's myth, you spend the decades up to me being sort of given the tools you need and the tasks you need, and this is where it all comes into play. It's such an intense decade where everything is coming at you. It's extraordinary, and the fact we don't talk about it in those terms really diminishes the experience. It feels to me really heroic.
I'm going to put on my super cape right now. Glynis McNichol is a writer and author of No One Tells You This, a memoir. Thank you so much, Glynis.
Thank you.
This all started because I sent a tweet out to the universe asking if any of you out there could relate to some of what I'm experiencing in my 40s. And so many of you told me that you did, and that you hadn't even realized how common our experiences were. From setting boundaries, to tackling finances, to facing new health issues and managing caregiving, and so much more, we're in this together. And I learned a lot from these conversations. Here's one example of something that really stuck with me. The surprising gender difference in what we tend to talk about openly when it comes to our health. You see, for men, there's a lot of conversation, resources about physical and sexual health in this decade, but less of a focus on their mental health. And on the flip side, women's sexual and physical issues in this decade tend to be more quickly swept under the rug, whereas the focus tends to be on their hormonal shifts and their mental health. So I guess my biggest takeaway from this special series of conversations is this. We need to talk more about this time in our lives. We need more stories, we need more research, and we definitely need more open conversation. Thanks for being a part of this first step, and I hope you'll share your stories with me and my team. We're at The Takeaway on Twitter. You can send us an email to takeawaydigital@gmail.com, or you can give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE and leave a voicemail. This has been The Juggle, a special episode of The Takeaway. Thanks to Alex Botti for production on this special, and we'll see you soon.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.